Session number 8721, Rule 7.
Mr. Baker, Reel 7. What sort of things would be in the parcels you receive from home?
Well, in the main, it would be biscuits, nice sweet biscuits, chocolate, lemonade powder, sometimes toothpaste. And that would be roughly about the limit, really. There wasn't much that they could send because they hadn't got much, you see, to send in those days, because the larder was almost bare in the home country because they're very short of things.
Who made up the parcels? Your own family and friends?
Oh yes, yes, that's only from our own family. There were no organisations sending parcels at all to us. And
would you share these parcels with your less fortunate?
Oh yes, anything that you got super of, you shared out, and the others did the same. That was the way it worked. And the comradeship in the line, you have to be there to really realise how great it was. Oh yes, a sort of a very brotherly feeling. Yes. There was nothing like it at home. You lived with them like animals, and you fed like animals, but you didn't behave like animals. No. No, some happy days, although under adverse conditions the whole time. Nothing much to wave your hand about at all.
Did you write home regularly yourself?
Yes. Used to write home, and I suppose it would take about a week for a letter to go home. And
what sort of things would you say? Can you remember?
Just told them, you know, the conditions. We didn't have to tell them very much about the war itself, but we just told them in general how we felt, and the conditions in general, and also we would like to be home as quick as we could, as a rule. Oh, yes.
Who did you write to?
I used to write to my relations. They used to write to my sisters, and I got two brothers, and my mother, and my old grandfather used to keep him informed how things were going.
So you used to write quite a few letters.
Oh, yes.
When would you write them? During the morning and afternoon?
Oh, yes. Now, that used to be one thing that we could do, you see. Because there wasn't always bombardments on, and some days were ever so quiet. And during those days, you were quite busy with your writing paper. And that is one of the things that used to come in the parcels. Writing paper. And pencils and things like that. And
now, I know you kept a diary because we've got it at the War Museum, but yes. Were you allowed to keep a diary, or was it done undercover, so to
speak? Oh, no, you could keep a diary, yes, because they used to tell you, you know, roughly what you ought not to put down. That was one of the things.
Can you remember when you'd write it up? Did you write it up each day, or did you write it up at the end of a week?
I used to write it up most days, oh yes. Well, there was not much else to do, you see. No. And some days, the time used to drag, you know, because there's nothing you could do, you see. Nothing. And You didn't play any card games or anything like that.
Was that not allowed, or?
No, if anybody liked to play Crown and Anchor, they could do. Any of those games, if they got anything to play with. My brother, he was an expert on Crown and Anchor, but he wasn't with me. No, he was in the Arch Yeomanry. But he said that he used to always have the old anchor board out, Yes.
But you didn't play Do This in Gallipoli?
No.
Because you didn't, no. just didn't feel like it?
No. And in the main, with the sun beaming down straight on one, you were really glad to try and get some shade on you occasionally by hanging your waterproof sheet over, you see, and try and get a bit of shade and pegging it into the side of the trench. And you'd sit with one of your pals beside you and try and have a little nap. And then you'd have your couple of hours on the parapet and then down again. You see, it wasn't a complete rest. Somebody always had to be manning the line, you see. Always, over half of them were on, the other half on what they called rest.
Could you describe the latrines and what they looked like?
Yes, the latrines were, in effect, a trench, roughly about 6 feet deep and about a yard wide. And roughly about 10 feet long. That's a trench 10 feet long, a yard wide, and 6 or 7 feet deep. The seating was two posts driven in the ground at each end, forming an X. And then a pole was lodged along on the cross piece, you see. And then you sat on that, hopefully, in full view of everybody, of course. And, of course, it didn't matter a damn because there's nobody around and no women or anything like that. And sat there while they could. Well, on one occasion, I heard a terrific shout. And the pole had snapped, and the four men who were sitting on the bar fell down in the muck. And to get them out, they had to put rifles down for them to hang on to come out. And they came out like slimy rabbits. And the sergeant who was near, he said, clear off down to the beach and get into the sea. As they were, which they had to, because nobody wanted to go near them. But anyway, that was that. And as from that, you know, the sanitary squads used to come along and throw earth on the top, you see, all the time, and keep them reasonably tidy. And but there was anything but home quality about it at all. I just hope for the best. And that was it. But the trouble was, in those days, you see, so many... is it going?
Yeah.
Yeah, so many people were in trouble. That dysentery was one of the things which really struck most of the people. And every day, quite a number of men went sick and were taken off the peninsula. They were just too ill to go on with it. That was one of the biggest enemies of the lot, dysentery.
Did you suffer from dysentery yourself?
Not at all, no. No bother at all, none.
What did the men who suffered from dysentery look like, and what was their attitude?
Well, you know, the trouble was that they couldn't hold their food. You see, it went straight through them in a sort of a watery arrangement, really, and there was nothing they could do about it. Like terrific diarrhoea, really, and all that weakened them no end in hours, not days. Yes, every day there were men going off, every day, large numbers too, and that was a bigger enemy than the Turks. That caused more casualties most days, because plenty of days there are very few casualties, you know, very few.
What about flies? Were they a pest?
Flies were a menace. Millions and millions of flies. If you tried to eat food, you had one hand slapping flies all the time and trying to eat the rest of it with the other one. it was a menace, really. And, of course, they couldn't have done us any good, flies. Because all those dead men out the front there, you see, and decaying, you know, and it was a terrible state. Most unhealthy situation.
Were the flies present round the latrines as well?
Oh, yes, yes. There were millions and millions. You looked on a piece of food, you know, if you left it, and in a few seconds it would be loaded with flies, absolutely coated with them.
Would you still eat it after a piece of food had gone by?
I'm afraid you had to, yes. The only way, really, was to cover it up as long as you possibly could, and do fly swatting and use your hand to keep them away.
What sort of flies were they?
Well, just the ordinary flies. You know, there were quite a number of blue bottles, but the rest were ordinary flies like we get at home. Just the same. Yes. Millions of them. Not dozens, millions. Menace. And, of course, they also must have caused no end of trouble, really, to people's health.
What about, you mentioned a mouse in between the lines. Did you have any trouble with other rodents, rats and things like
no,
that?
No, I never saw one rat, no. And that was the only mouse that I ever saw, that one that sat on my thigh that night. He was the only one I ever saw, yes.
Was there much of a problem with lice?
Lice, yeah, they were a big problem, yes, in those days. You got lousy in about 5 days, and it didn't matter what you did. You turned your clothes inside out, you see. Every other day you wore them the proper way round one day, and then the next day you turned them right over. Wore your trousers inside out and your shirts inside out. And but they bred, you know, during the night, and they used to breed in the seams of your trousers, you see, you know. And you used to go along them with a match to try and get rid of the eggs. But the next day you were still loaded again. Hundreds of them. And, of course, you didn't get much peace because you're always scratching with lice about you. I don't know how long they take to breed, but it's very rapidly that they breed. When I left Gallipoli and was in hospital in Malta, in the naval hospital there, I felt something itchy around my neck, and one had got in the bow that was holding my identification disc on the last louse I carried. That was in hospital in Malta. But before that, I was lousy. But that was the last one. The only way to get rid of them is to have a complete change of clothes. And, of course, you didn't get that on Gallipoli.
Did you get much chance to wash at all, or did you just get the odd bath? Did you get much chance to wash at all, or did you just bathe in the sea?
No, the only time you could wash was to go down to the sea. There was no, next to no water there, you know. One or two tiny streams which had dried up. They call them deers over there, you know, the rivers, Creves deer and things like that. Not many of them, only tiny brooks, really.
What about shaving? Did you get a chance to shave at all?
No, didn't shave. Well, I didn't grow anything, so I didn't have to shave, but those who could have shaved, they grew beards. Yes.
What about haircuts? Did
and some grew long hair, and there was no question of haircuts like there is at home, you know, on the barracks square. Oh no, you just went right tramps. You lived like tramps. You didn't polish any buttons. You wore any clothes you like. You wore any uniform. Bits that you like, you wore it how you liked. And if you liked to wear it inside out, which you did, nobody worried. All they were concerned with was that you could fight. and you were fit to fight.
Did this change the relationship you had with your officers at all, and your NCOs? Did they become closer to you?
Yes, very friendly, very friendly. As you know, the Royal Marines are very strict on discipline, you know, and but our officers were gentlemen, and the NCOs too. Oh yeah, they were very friendly. You know, very like brothers then, really. Yes. The comradeship was wonderful, I think.
Did you have any trouble with toothache or anything like that?
Oh yes, I did. Yes, I had a terrible toothache one day. They dug in behind our trench a battery of 18-pounders, and when they fired these salvo with them, it used to make your head expand. Oh, it was terrible. And I had a terrific toothache. And I said to the sergeant, I shall have to do something about this. He said, go down to the Australian sick bay. He said, they'll see to you down there. I went down. I saw the Australian doctor, and he said, what do you want, Digger? I said, I got a tooth I'd like taken out. He said, righto. He said, just lie down there. I laid flat on the ground. He said, he then selected two strong Australians and had one on each shoulder. And then he sat on me and he said, open your mouth. Which one is it? I pointed out which one it was. And he hung on to me and he said, open your mouth. And he said, I'm going to hurt you. I said, I'm sure you are. He pulled away and pulled away. It was one of my back teeth. And finally it came out and he went over backwards to the amusement of all the Aussies. And I got up and I didn't even say thank you and slunk back to the front line. And the sergeant said, how did you get on? I said, oh, I said, he's nearly pulled me right head off. And they laughed like anything, you know, the boys. And I felt in my mouth, God, I said, he's had the wrong one out. And, you know, I had that tooth until I was 57, the one he should have had. Yeah, and I was 19 then.
Yes. Did you have any more trouble with that tooth?
No, I had that till I was 57, that tooth that he should have taken. Yeah, that was just a nerve, I suppose, that was giving me trouble, you know. Yes.
Did you have much contact with chaplains or padres, and was religion important to you in getting through this experience at Gallipoli?
Not really, no. quite frankly, I can't remember very much about church services. Just, I would only say one or two that I ever attended. Yes, and when we were in the line, there was no question of anything like church services. Never.
Was religion a help to you, though, at all? Did you feel your own religion or lack of it? Did that help you?
Yes, I suppose, really. If one spoke the truth, they were always got... they always prayed at night, you know, quietly to themselves, that they were going to be around the next day. There's no question about that at all. It couldn't be observed. No, there was no sign of anybody preaching at all. Not once did I hear anybody preaching. Not once.
Did the constant stress of being under fire all the time in one way and another, did that get to you at all? Did you become nervy? Or
no, not really, no. You were conscious all the time that you were in danger because, you see, you were always, even out of the line, when you went in what they called rest, the Turks used to send over shells from the Asiatic side. They had a 14-inch over there called Asiatic Annie, we used to call it. And they used to fire odd shells all over the place because they knew they'd hit somebody or something, you see, because they'd got all this range to fire on. But they'd only got the one gun that was capable of doing anything. And they were 14-inch, and they didn't fire many of them. So we were not too worried from that. But with the long-range guns, up on Akibaba, they used to fire them, and used to fire anywhere, as I should think, and just hope that they'd hit something. But there was a piece of land where the teams used to play football, and I think the Turks used to watch with their field glasses the football. That was before football was very well known in Turkey. And there was not one shell hole on that piece of ground. Not one. That was absolutely solid and flat. No, not one shell at all on it. And it was hard and sandy somewhat. And you could play good football on there.
Did you play?
Yes. Oh, there was the Dardanelles Cup to be fought for with the different regiments. Down, this was at the southern end at Helles. And, yes, I played left back for the battalion, the ruins of the battalion, I should say. And we played the Hood Battalion Naval Division in the Dardanelles Cup, and we drew one each. But what happened later on, I just don't know. But I played in that cup tie. Yes.
It was a properly organised match, was it, with referees?
Yes. Oh, yeah, referees, and all very keenly fought, too.
What did you use for goalposts, or did you have...
Oh, they got the goalposts made up. Yes, they made them out of bits from trees, you know. Looked a bit raw, but they were standard size.
Did they have netting and a marker?
No nets. No nets, just the posts. And they marked out along the side, you know, by marking in the sand for the lines. No whitewash or anything like that.
And you just played in your uniform, of course.
Yeah, and we stripped right down. To see, because we hadn't got much in the way of clothes, so we didn't have to wear very much. So one side wore shirts, and the other side didn't wear any. So there was no trouble for the referee to sort them out. And I must say that the football was quite good. We'd got two professionals in our team. Yes. Moore and Carter, I think they were. Yes. And apart from football, there wasn't anything that we could do at all in the way of sport. Nothing.
So how did you spend it? When you were in rest camp, how did that differ from the front line?
In rest camp, you slept in ditches. About 4 feet deep, and they were dug right across the peninsula, and the different regiments were allocated so many yards of these ditches, which they called trenches, only just like an ordinary ditch. No dugouts whatsoever, not one dugout. I shouldn't think there was a dugout at all down the southern end. I never saw one.
What duties did you have when you were in rest camp?
Hmm?
Did you have any duties while you were in rest camp?
No, very little, really. All they used to just have a roll call and see that everybody was there who was fit. And those who were not fit... They used to send them off down to the nearest sick bay, and then some of them you didn't see anymore. They'd got this awful dysentery, and they didn't come back anymore.
And then what would you do during the rest of the day?
You sat around, you know, because, see, it was very warm there, and... You tried to sit under a bit of shade by getting down in the trench sometimes and putting your sheet, waterproof sheet up to keep the sun off you.
So it wasn't that much different from being in the front line, in fact?
Oh, no. There was very little. Because when you were down there, they used to spray these odd shells over you, see, and you never knew where one was going to pitch. There was no question of any peace down there at all. You never knew where they were going to drop one. Fortunately, they hadn't got much ammunition.
Did you go on many bathing parties into the sea?
Yes, we used to go down sometimes in parties, and sometimes you could go down freely if you were in a trench that was anywhere near the sea. You just went down and got in the sea.
Did you used to go regularly?
Yes. And on very, very hot days, when you hoped you could do a bit of washing, you stripped off and did some washing. And dried it in about an hour, you know. See, you've got no reserve of clothes.
The uniform must have been in a terrible state.
Oh, yes. Nobody worried about it at all. No, very, very dilapidated.
Did you go on working parties when you were in rest camp at night? Did you carry rations or munitions up to the front line, or were you just left to your own devices?
When we were in rest...
When you were in rest camp, were you on working parties?
Yes. Occasionally, not every night, occasionally you had to go up and do some trench digging. You know, behind the line, like a second line and all that kind of thing. Used to do that in the dark. What they called a reserve trench. And occasionally, unfortunately, you had to go out the front and dig a sap. Oddly enough, I don't know why, but I never remember the Turks opening with a machine gun. Not in the dark. Not once. Which, if they had done, they'd have caught some people.
And they Who would supervise you in this work, digging saps and trenches?
Well, I suppose it was the commander of the section. Who used to order these jobs to be done. And he would order the various platoons, you know, to do their jobs. See, all the platoons were under a man, you know. There were no 50 to the platoon. Not over there. Well, our battalion was supposed to be 1,060. And we hadn't got 400. No.